Mikhail Gorbachev, the last leader of the Soviet Union, died this week. He was 91. And our colleague Ann Simmons, who's covered Moscow for decades, remembers a moment in Red Square in 1988. Gorbachev was walking with U.S. President Ronald Reagan. They were greeting people along the streets.
He was very much, very open, very friendly, very engaging as a person, and quite down to earth. He would actually go out onto the streets and engage with people. And he encouraged, like, discussion, and he encouraged people to speak back. And that was very unusual at the time for the average Soviet citizen.
During his time in power, Gorbachev presided over a time of profound change, ushering in reforms that ultimately led to the end of the Soviet Union. For that, he's remembered in the West as an icon.
Gorbachev forged a new dialogue with the West.
Gorbachev's friendship with former President Ronald Reagan brought historic talks, which led to the reducing of nuclear arsenals for both nations.
He oversaw enormous changes, namely the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1991 and the end of the Cold War.
But in his homeland, his legacy is different. Gorbachev isn't getting a state funeral, and Russian President Vladimir Putin won't be attending his burial. Many Russians view Gorbachev as a weak leader whose policies led to economic collapse and eroded Russia's standing in the world, a legacy that the country is still grappling with today.
One thing we have to note is that Mr. Gorbachev did not expect his reforms to unravel the Soviet Union. He did not expect his reforms to lead to his country's demise, but he lit the fuse and it ignited a revolution of change.
Welcome to The Journal, our show about money, business, and power. I'm Kate Limbaugh. It's Friday, September 2nd. Coming up on the show, the divisive legacy of Mikhail Gorbachev.
This episode is brought to you by Vonage. With Vonage Video API, your developers can easily create custom video experiences tailored to your business. Enhance every conversation with live video, whether it's delivering faster tech support, improving customer service, or enabling interactive meetings and events. Unlock the true video potential of your business. Discover how at Vonage.com.
Russians have fierce opinions about Gorbachev. So fierce, they were captured in a fast food commercial in the late 90s for none other than Pizza Hut. In this ad, Gorbachev is playing himself. He's with his granddaughter at a Pizza Hut in Moscow when a family at another table recognizes him.
That's Gorbachev.
A debate ensues. Was Gorbachev good or bad for the country? The father blames Gorbachev for economic chaos.
Это из-за него у нас в экономике бардак.
His son replies that Gorbachev brought opportunity and freedom to Russia.
Благодаря ему у нас новые возможности.
The discussion gets rather heated.
Это из-за него у нас политическая нестабильность.
Да благодаря ему у нас свобода.
Then the mom jumps in. She says it's thanks to Gorbachev that there's Pizza Hut in Russia. And then the family all raise their slices in a toast and say, "Hail to Gorbachev."
За Горбачёва!
За Горбачёва!
За Горбачёва!
This divisiveness around Gorbachev evolved over decades. It didn't start out that way.
He was born into a peasant family, actually. It's a mixed family, a family of Russian and Ukrainian heritage, in a village in the southern part of Russia, Stavropol. And during a purge of Joseph Stalin in the 1930s, both of his grandfathers were arrested and actually spent time in the Gulag labor camps. And that really had quite a profound impact on him. He had all said that in later days.
Gorbachev studied law and became a prosecutor after graduating. He was active in the Communist Party, and over the years, he rose through the ranks, eventually joining the country's powerful Politburo, the party's ruling body.
And in 1985, he was actually named General Secretary of the Communist Party. And he was quite young, 54 years old. Those who preceded him were kind of up in age in their 60s and 70s. And so he was considered to be, you know, this kind of new blood, this youngster coming in to rule this very large country.
This new blood, Gorbachev, brought fresh ideas about how to lift the country's sluggish economy.
He envisioned kind of a way to revitalize the socialist economy and the political system. And he wanted to boost the country's low productivity. He wanted to boost the kind of substandard quality of goods. Nothing was being produced, or very little was. You had to line up for everything. He always said that he really felt that Russia could not continue, or the Soviet Union could not continue along the path that it was taking, because the economy was slow and sluggish. There was no movement. People felt they were running in place or even going backward. He felt that he could actually bring greater openness to society and really revive, I think one of the main things was reviving the economy at the time, which there was this sense of kind of resignation, apathy, and he really wanted to change that.
Was he trying to take the country in the direction of a market-based capitalist economy?
Not immediately, no. He was a very staunch communist, there's no doubt about that. I would say that that was a result of his policies. I do not believe that was the immediate aim of Gorbachev. The immediate aim was to try and work within the type of economy that was there, but give it a bit of a boost.
Gorbachev wanted to bring this new vision through an approach called perestroika.
Больше деловитости. Больше демократизма.
More entrepreneurship, more democracy, more discipline, and then we will be able to build perestroika and give it a new boost to our evolving socialism.
And tell us, what is perestroika?
Perestroika, it basically meant this restructuring of the system, that the system of politics and the economy would be revitalized. It was just meant to be a change to make Russia better, to make the Soviet Union better. He wanted to promote a better work ethic, because lots of people complained about corruption and bribery. If you wanted to get into a restaurant, you know, you could be told that, oh no, there are no seats available, until you hand over a packet of cigarettes to the guard in front. So he wanted to change this type of mentality and change this system. And he believed that perestroika, this restructuring, was the way to do that.
Gorbachev extended his reforms with another concept that he called glasnost, or openness. Suddenly, there was more room to criticize the government.
With Gorbachev's system of glasnost, or policy of glasnost and openness, it really encouraged differing views and greater candor in government affairs. He released a lot of political prisoners, and he also allowed the publication of information that was once classified about the crimes that were committed during the era of Joseph Stalin. As he himself has said, there were going to be more press freedoms, more freedom in terms of voting and elections, kind of competitive elections. People were going to be able to speak their mind.
And for people who were there, what did this change feel like?
I remember in the 1990s, as a journalist working there, that, you know, that there was a great impact, because you would stop one person to ask a question on the street, and suddenly there were 10 people wanting to answer the question, which was dramatically different to when I was here in the 80s.
What was it like in the 80s?
oh no, you would never speak for foreigner. You have to kind of keep your distance from a Westerner. You weren't allowed to mix as much with Westerners. They were, you know, they were enemies more of the state in the 80s. They were trying to destroy what the Soviet Union had, which was this great and powerful system of socialism.
Perestroika and glasnost had far-reaching consequences, from national borders to daily life.
With this openness also came a sense of disorder for many people. For example, you know, you could now see pornographic magazines being sold on the street. You'd never see that during the Soviet Union. There was almost this sense of, my goodness, we're becoming, what the Soviets seemed to think was, we're becoming Westerners. We shouldn't be acting like this. There's a sense of a lack of kind of morals.
Greater freedom of expression also stoked calls for independence in many of the Soviet Union's 15 republics, in places like Estonia, Armenia, and Tajikistan.
It kind of unleashed a wave of nationalism in some places, because with the freedoms to speak up came the freedom to want to reclaim your identity, the identity that many of these republics had before they got this Soviet stamp. And many critics actually say that that was not a good thing, because Gorbachev actually unleashed this wave of nationalism, some critics have said.
Gorbachev violently cracked down on some protests in Soviet republics. But outside Soviet borders, he stood aside as a wave of countries broke away from the Eastern Bloc.
You know, analysts and people who know Gorbachev or knew him quite well say that he really reviled conflict. He always was of the mind that you should be able to talk things through. You should be able to come to a compromise. So he didn't actually intervene to quell a lot of these popular uprisings. And this actually led to the eventual, you know, kind of demise of several communist regimes in the Eastern Bloc, including the former Yugoslavia, Germany.
From the Berlin Wall specifically, take a look at them. They've been there since last night. They are here in the thousands. They are here in the tens of thousands. Occasionally they shout, Die Mauer muss weg, the wall must go.
And it was really a sense of, you know, no, people need to have their say.
How was that received internationally?
Oh, that was lauded internationally, was praised greatly. He was seen as a maverick. He was seen as someone with whom the West could make a deal, could be friendly. He was seen as someone who, yes, was going to end this Cold War that the West and East had confronted for decades.
After signing a historic nuclear disarmament treaty with the U.S., Gorbachev was recognized with the Nobel Peace Prize in 1990. This all vaulted him to superstar status in the West. It was called Gorby Mania.
It was the sense that suddenly the Soviet Union was open because of this man. There was a sense that Gorby Mania was, it was almost as though the West suddenly had a friend in the East, and there was no longer this Cold War. And it was all because of this man, Mikhail Gorbachev, who was seen in some places as basically being a rock star.
But at home, people saw Gorbachev very differently. That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems. But buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/journal. Terms and conditions apply.
By the start of the 90s, there was a sense in Russia that some of Gorbachev's reforms were undermining Russia's status in the world.
Although many Soviets, Soviet citizens, wanted a greater degree of freedom and openness, they were also used to a system that they'd been under for 70 years and couldn't change overnight. There was a lot of talk among some of the older generation of wanting kind of this iron fist, someone who could really stand up to the West, someone who would stand up and take charge. And in some critics would say that Gorbachev, for them, wasn't a strong enough leader in that regard.
In August of 1991, Gorbachev's colleagues decided he had gone too far and attempted to unseat him as president.
It was the summer, and Gorbachev was on vacation with his wife and daughter at a government villa on the Black Sea. And I remember being in my apartment in Moscow and getting a call, actually, from a colleague in Los Angeles, also working for Time magazine, because I was based here for that magazine at the time. And I remember her saying, you know, there's a coup, Anne. And I was still in bed. It was like 6 a.m. in the morning. And I was thinking, of course, don't listen to me. There's no coup. She's like, get up. And sure enough, I heard like rumbling outside my window and there were tanks on the street. And I turned on the radio and they said that there was this emergency situation. And that everyone should keep calm. At the time, it was very difficult to know exactly what was going on. I remember running out onto the street and trying to talk to some of these tank drivers who told me that these soldiers had said, we've been told to go to the Russian White House. We don't know what's going on. That's, you know, we've been told that we should just head there. There was a press conference later that day of the announcement, and there were these coup plotters then who said that Gorbachev was incapacitated and he would no longer be able to lead the Soviet Union and that they were going to take charge.
The coup failed. Soon after, Anne had a chance to meet with Gorbachev and his wife at a dinner with journalists, where the couple opened up about what they'd experienced.
He said, and especially his wife told us, that this was a really terrifying experience because they didn't know what was going to happen to them, and it was quite unexpected. Raisa Maximovna, his wife, really went into detail about her fear and the anxiety that she felt. And she also felt that it was unfair because she felt that her husband was being targeted. And all he was trying to do, according to her, was make the Soviet Union a better place.
What did that say about his popularity in Russia and the Soviet Union? And what did that say about how people viewed his policies?
Of course, the coup failed, but it definitely significantly weakened Gorbachev's position. It really showed that there was a crack in the system. And it was mainly because these old kind of conservative, you know, part of the conservative hierarchy who had been benefiting from the old system, kind of the old system of privilege and cronyism, they had wanted to reverse Mr. Gorbachev's policies and weren't able to. So they had decided that it was time to get rid of this man, but it did not quite work. So Gorbachev, in fact, of course, survived the attempted coup, but it definitely weakened his position. And in fact, you know, it led to his resignation and the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
Дорогие соотечественники, сограждане, в силу сложившейся...
Gorbachev resigned in December 1991, 4 months after the attempted coup. The Soviet Union was over. After leaving office, Gorbachev continued to be a highly divisive figure, giving speeches and attending events in the West, where he was celebrated for his role in bringing the Cold War to an end. But at home, he was deeply unpopular. In 1996, Gorbachev tried to make a political comeback. he got less than 1% of the vote. What did Russians blame him for?
They blamed him for the dissolution of what they saw as being their great country. This used to be an empire of which Russia ruled. And all of that dissipated. It disappeared almost overnight, is what people thought. And that was a crushing blow to many Soviets because essentially the demise of the Soviet Union left one sole superpower in the world, the United States. And that was almost humiliating for many Russians.
To the end, Gorbachev stood by the reforms he initiated. And in his later years, he was critical of Putin for rolling back political freedoms and isolating Russia from the West.
Using authoritarian methods as a policy for the future, that I think is wrong. I think that's a mistake.
He watched kind of the poverty and also the reversal of many of the reforms that he had made. And in many interviews, later interviews, you know, he expressed his disappointment that there wasn't the level of competition in elections and that there had been this reversal of freedom of the press, a clampdown on press freedoms. And that was disappointing for him.
When you think about Gorbachev's life and impact, what's the enduring image that comes to your mind?
I think it's of a person who really tried to make change and actually did. He launched a revolution of thought, a revolution of consciousness, if you wish, that people could actually know that, you know what, I am allowed to challenge. I am allowed to stand up. I am allowed to speak up. I am allowed to have my own thoughts. And I'm allowed to express myself without, and this was, you know, what he wanted, without kind of retribution or fear. Of course, that has changed over the years with the new system in place that people do not always feel that sense of freedom.
And he changed the map of the world.
Yes, he certainly did. In terms of the geopolitics, the Soviet Union is no more. And certainly, you know, he injected this world with a sense that, at least at that time, that the East and West could be friends and the Cold War was no more.
That's all for today, Friday, September 2nd. The Journal is a co-production of Gimlet and The Wall Street Journal. Your hosts are Ryan Knutson and me, Kate Limbaugh. The show is produced by Melvis Acosta Crisostomo, Annie Baxter, Catherine Brewer, Pia Gadkari, Rachel Humphreys, Matt Kwong, Annie Minoff, Laura Morris, Kim Nadervane Petersa, Afif Nasuli, Enrique Perez de la Rosa, Sarah Platt, Aaron Randall, Alan Rodriguez Espinosa, Vladislav Sedek, Pierce Singy, Catherine Whalen, and Victoria Whitley Berry, with help from Jonathan Sanders. Our engineers are Griffin Tanner and Nathan Singapak, with help this week from Peter Leonard. Our theme music is by So Wiley. Additional music this week from Catherine Anderson, Peter Leonard, Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, and Blue Dot Sessions. Fact-checking this week by Nicole Pasulka. Thanks for listening. We're off Monday. See you Tuesday.